So much news from Washington this week, from Neil Gorsuch, President Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court, to the continuing debate over the legality and ethics of President Trump's immigration order issued last week. So let's bring in our friends Ed Ayers and Joanne Freeman, who look at the news of the day in the context of history. They're historians, and they host the weekly podcast Backstory. Welcome back.
Thanks very much.
Great to be here.
And Joanne, let me start with you. Remind us how this power to name Supreme Court justices came to be the president's power.
That was actually something that in the Constitutional Convention they had a lot of debate about, because no one quite knew what would be the right way to appoint a Supreme Court justice. And some people thought the president should simply appoint that person. But to some people, that sounded threateningly monarchical. Some people thought, well, maybe Congress should appoint this person. But that seemed unlikely, I guess. They thought that Congress might not be wise enough to pick the right kind of person. So they, after a lot of debate, they came up with one of many compromises for better and worse in the Constitution, and that is essentially a check and balance sort of a thing where the president appoints and then the Senate approves.
But they did not give the president the power to remove a justice.
Well, Congress would be the ones who would have to impeach a justice, and that actually happens pretty early on. I mean, that so as soon as we have the first transfer of a political party in the presidency and in the government, so when poor John Adams loses the presidency, isn't reelected, and he's a Federalist, and then the Republican, Thomas Jefferson, gains office, he inherits a Federalist Supreme Court. And not only that, but the Federalists had pushed through a judiciary bill that added even more justices around the country. So the Federalists tried to grab judicial power, and Jefferson responded by urging Congress to impeach a particularly irritating and imperious Supreme Court justice.
Whose name was?
Well, his name was Samuel Chase, but I think because he was such a kind of a rough and ready character and apparently had a ruddy complexion, he was called Old Bacon Face.
Okay.
People were cruel back then.
I guess so. It's a good nickname, though, really. I mean,
well, probably not to Samuel Chase, though.
Right. Well, and Ed, back then in the late 1700s and early 1800s, when Samuel Chase served on the Supreme Court, he was one of only six justices. Today we have nine. For a few years, it was 10. What is so special about nine?
Nothing. It's kind of what they settled on after the American Civil War, and then custom, as control so much of American politics, sort of settled in. And it became seen as, well, that's the number of people on the Supreme Court. So it's actually not prescribed anywhere.
And FDR actually tried to make it more than nine, right?
It seemed like such a good idea. He was having such trouble passing all the New Deal legislation with the Supreme Court that seemed wedded to older ideas. And so here's his argument. What do you say we increase the court to 15 so that the heavy burden of responsibility won't be so much on any one person? And both Democrats and Republicans said, no, you're taking that a step too far.
So FDR unsuccessful in that attempt to raise the number of Supreme Court justices. But let's talk about one of the things that's going on now, which is a potential fight over Judge Neil Gorsuch. Democrats very upset about what happened to Merrick Garland, who wasn't given a hearing by the Republicans in the last year of President Obama's second term. This has brought a lot of people back to what happened in 1987 in the Robert Bork hearings. Remind us what happened there.
Well, in the Bork hearings, the idea was, well, okay, it's Republican time. But the problem was that Bork was this originalist, and the Democrats were just not going to allow him to go forward, especially Teddy Kennedy, who launched a campaign against him and a really vociferous speech charging about all the terrible things that would happen if Bork were nominated. So this was really the first time you'd seen a big fight against a Supreme Court nominee.
Do you think that that whole thing set a precedent?
Well, it certainly did. And part of the argument was, too, it's not so much that Bork was not suited in terms of his training or his experience, but because of his ideology. And that's what so much of the debates are about today, is what has this justice supported in the past. And so that's one reason you'll see that they are not putting forward scholars as much anymore who leave this elaborate paper trail, but rather practicing judges who have a more ambiguous legacy.
We're speaking with historians Ed Ayers and Joanne Freeman, hosts of the podcast Backstory. And I want to switch gears here from the Supreme Court to another big story that's going on in the news right now, and that is President Trump's executive order restricting travel, temporarily halting entry for refugees, as well as citizens of seven predominantly Muslim countries, plus an indefinite block of Syrian refugees. Joanne, take us back to the 18th century when it wasn't Syrians some Americans were worried about, but the French.
Sure. Well, in the 18th century, in the 1790s, so we're talking the first decade of the government, you had fear that the nation was going to end up in a war with France. We were sort of hovering on the edge of a war with France. And the Federalists, who were in power, partly thinking that dangerous revolutionary French ideas might come onto American shores, and partly hoping that they could smack at their opponents, the Republicans, who liked the French, passed the Alien Acts, which gave them the right to deport dangerous French aliens and even created something along the lines of a registry of incoming people from France that came into the new United States. That was really a concern about partisan politics and, I suppose you could say, national security. You could even actually say terrorism, because I remember many moons ago finding a letter from, I think it's from John Adams to Thomas Jefferson, when they're both ex-presidents. And when Adams looks back to this period when there was this quasi-war with France, he actually uses the word terrorism. He's trying to explain to Jefferson how frightening it was. And I think the sentence is something like, "What think you of terrorism, Mr. Jefferson?"
Well, and of course, now when we hear the phrase dangerous French aliens, I think it sounds like a bad movie coming to the theaters, you know, pretty soon. But
it makes you want to get out the freedom fries as you watch
right.
it.
Well, and what about in 1882? It wasn't the French, but the Chinese that the U.S. was worried about.
Yeah, and think about how long a time that is between crises about immigration, from the late 18th century to the late 19th century. But in 1882, the great threat was seen to be the Chinese, whom white Americans had gone to great efforts to import to help build the railroads. And in fact, nearly 800,000 Chinese immigrants had come in the year before. And so Congress says, look, we're going to pass the Chinese Exclusion Act, and we're going to pass the Immigration Act that will make this a federal responsibility. So it won't just be one state after another doing this, but we're going to make sure that the Secretary of the Treasury oversees all of these immigrants coming in.
Hmm. And in that same year, the U.S. also banned people with disabilities and perceived defects.
Well, yeah, and that could be just about anything, convict, lunatic, idiot, or anybody unable to take care of themselves, the law read in general. But it also later on opened up the door to discrimination against homosexuals and also against defectives of various kinds, as they called it. And that could even include varicose veins or flat feet. And so you found the shipping companies were responsible for taking those people back. So they would have been screening people out in the first place. So it had an even greater effect than it might have seemed.
So how did those immigration bans come to an end?
Well, it took a long time for them to come to an end. And first, they got more intense in 1924, in which they passed laws that said only 2% of the percentage of the people who are already here can come. And that helped screen out a lot of people from Southern and Eastern Europe. But then in 1965, which is really the origins of the things that we're talking about so much today, one of the men who had been an opponent of the 1924 law had made it his life's purpose, Emanuel Seller, to overturn that. And in 1965, in the wake of President Kennedy's assassination and a sort of the globalization of the United Nations frowning on these kinds of discriminations, Congress passed a new law, that the Immigration Act of 1965, that removed a lot of these restrictions. And as a result, there was an enormous amount of immigration that followed, and from a lot of places such as Asia and Africa, the Middle East and Southern Eastern Europe, that had not come before. And it's fair to say, too, that the consequences of that were a lot more people came than even Lyndon Johnson thought. He said, this is not going to affect millions of people, but it ended up doing so.
So when we hear about these immigration bans of the past now, we look back and say, oh, how could they do that? But did these bans accomplish their goals? I mean, do historians look back? Do any historians look back and say that was a good idea?
I mean, I don't think we look back and say, yeah, that was excellent. But I do think we look back and see patterns, right? And I think with immigration, and particularly with all of these seemingly episodic things where you say, ooh, in the 1790s, they were really scared of the French and of scary ideas. And, oh, they were really scared in the 1880s of a labor shortage and maybe about race. The fact of the matter is it's always fears of one kind or another that are causing these moments of immigration strife. And it's kind of the same fears over and over again, fears about dangerous ideas or fears about race or fears about religion. Or even fears that have something to do with partisan politics. But we sort of fall into that space, and it just kind of depends upon the historical moment that we're in and what's happening in the country and what fears are foremost.
That's Joanne Freeman and Ed Ayers, historians and host of the podcast Backstory, joining us once again to take a look at the historical context of some of the stories in the news today. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you. It's great being with you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.